All right, let's start. Welcome to Driving Enterprise Social from the Bottom Up. Before I start, can I get a quick show of hands? How many people here have been using Yammer or some other enterprise social network for longer than for more than a year? So yeah, quite a few. How many people have been using Yammer or similar tool for maybe a couple of months? You're just kind of rolling out. Cool. And I guess the rest of you are just kind of thinking about rolling out Yammer and or an enterprise social network tool. And one final question: how many of you feel that you have the active support of your senior management team to do this kind of work? Okay, that's pretty good. You know, maybe a quarter, which because the most probably one of the most common problems when it comes to rolling out an enterprise social network is the lack of support from senior management team. And by lack of support, I don't mean that they would be necessarily actively against it. It just means that they are not actively supporting it. They are not using it themselves. They are not. They don't see the need to invest in it. So if you use the free version or somebody's doing it on the side, that's fine. But if you ask for more money to hire more people or because it's actually takes quite a lot of time and effort, then you kind of hit a wall there. So you kind of face this dual challenge where you, on the other hand, need to convince senior management and then, of course, get people to actually use the network. So I'm going to address both these issues. I'm drawing from my own experiences, and also I've interviewed quite a few people about their experiences in driving enterprise social. So I wrote this guidebook on the topic, so that's why I've got, you know, can draw from several people's stories. And so we're going to kind of go through both cases and where you need to get the senior management team on board and then staff to use it as well. And I'm going to start by explaining how I got into Yammer, how I got into this whole social networking, enterprise social network thing. And the story begins from Finland, from Northern Europe, where I used to work for a global nonprofit, which had a small country office in Helsinki. My closest colleagues were actually based in Denmark, Norway, and Sweden. And since it was a global organization where we're, you know, communicating daily with people from Indonesia, the States, other European countries. And so despite the fact that we were, you know, dispersed around the globe, we communicated quite a bit. There was a constant stream of, you know, instant messaging going on there all the time. And it was really easy to contact experts around the world. So about 5 years ago, I moved to London, England, to work for a local organization there. And they were basically based in one building in London. And I thought, brilliant, you know, we're all under one roof. You know, how effective must communication be when you're sitting next to each other? But nothing could be further from the truth. It actually, what happened was, I was there trying to kind of, you know, learn what people were doing. And I asked, you know, well, how do I find out what you're doing? And, you just email people. And so I emailed my colleague, you know, do you know who would know the answer to this question? And she would then maybe forward the email to her colleague. And then the email ended up somewhere and I probably never got a reply back. And I felt really, really alone. There was I on the second floor, basically clueless what was going on in the rest of the organization. So one day I suggested to my boss that I could maybe go and sit on the third floor because I have absolutely no idea what people there are doing. And my boss said, yeah, really smart move. infiltrate the enemy lines. And that was where we were with the kind of, you know, internal communication and collaboration, and which was a shame because the people were really, really nice, and there was a real, and I felt like this can't be true, you know. And so into 1 year to my job, they created a new role in this organization that had an internal communications element, and I said, that's my job. I need to get that job because I want to change the way people communicate here. And I got the job, and one of the first things I did was I conducted a survey just to kind of find out where we were. And it turns out that we did have a bit of a problem. About 90% felt they missed information relevant to their work. About 86% wanted to know what other staff members were doing in the organization. And some people had even started to use Twitter to kind of communicate with their colleagues inside the organization. And I was like, this is pretty shocking. This is pretty clear that, you know, something needs to be done. And I talked to a senior manager, a director, one of the directors, and said, this is pretty bad. You know, we need to do something. And he said, I don't really know what you're talking about. When I send an email, I get a response right away. And then that's when I understood that why senior managers don't necessarily always understand what the issue is, why these networks are such a good thing, because they don't feel the pain in their daily work necessarily. You know, they send an email, people kind of go like, oh, need to answer CEO's email right away or director's email. So, and in the from the survey, I kind of, you know, would have to kind of condense the theme or the themes. It was basically people felt that they were either drowning in information, irrelevant information, or when they needed information, they couldn't get it. So it was, you know, why didn't I hear about this kind of thing. The other problem, I mean, the problem I identified, and this is, you know, email, like really old-fashioned email, no integration with Yammer or anything like that, where if you send a message, it's basically kind of, you know, if you're lucky, you know, it finds the right person in the other side of the organization when it's gone through the proper channels, and that email communication tends to kind of follow hierarchy a bit more closely. So, and it's a very, very inefficient way of finding out what's happening and who knows what. The other problem with email or this kind of traditional email is that when you have these discussions, and they might be really, really useful discussions, they get locked up in people's mailboxes, and, you know, somebody else might have used that information or been able to use it, but or wanted to use it but can't. And we actually, in that organization, we deleted our mailboxes maybe every 6 months or so or something. I don't know why. Which I was like, you know, always thought, you know, what a waste of information. So this is actually, you know, hugely, really common problem. And this kind of information not reaching people. And the other issue that we faced was untapped expertise. This was an organization that ran a lot of projects. So for projects, people came in for maybe 2 or 3 years. And that's quite a short time to kind of the rest of the organization to learn what you are good at. So a lot of people there felt that they could have contributed. They would have had knowledge or information that could have, you know, saved us money or, you know, made the project more effective. But they weren't listened to because they were in the wrong, they had the wrong job title. Job titles definitely didn't do people justice in this organization, but they weren't in the right place in the hierarchy to kind of contribute. So for example, if I had an idea, on how to develop our online communities, which were I was responsible for, and I wrote a paper on it, and I then gave the paper to my line manager, who would then present it to the senior management team, even though he didn't know nothing about this topic. So I would have to brief him, you know, explain, you know, and then if they ask this, you answer this, and da da da. I was like, this can't be right. So those were the kind of two themes that came out of the survey. And this is a really, really common problem. You know, information gets locked in people's heads, in mailboxes that, you know, nobody else can access. And I think this is a brilliant quote from Lou Platt, former CEO of Hewlett Packard. If Hewlett Packard knew what Hewlett Packard knows, we would be 3 times more productive. So this is why we then decided, or I decided, that we needed Yammer. I mean, this was a time when Yammer had been around maybe for about a year. So this is a standalone version of Yammer, so no fancy integrations with SharePoint or anything else. And I thought it was brilliant because a social network, as I had a background in enterprise, you know, social media and all that, so I knew that there are a couple of really good things about social networks. And if I can inject just a little bit of network theory here, the reason why, one of the reasons why networks are so efficient is that, let's say I post a question on Yammer, and somebody who happens to be a so-called, in social network theory, there are different types of nodes. In a social network, those nodes are human beings, and some people know a lot of people, so they are hubs. And these hub people are not necessarily managers, they're not necessarily high up in the organization, or they could be, but often they're not. So one of these people sees my message, and that this person might know somebody who is another type of node, a person who is a connector, somebody who has his or her feet in two different worlds, let's say engineering and marketing. And that person then can connect to, you know, somebody who doesn't belong to my sphere at all, let's say someone from the engineering team, and the information kind of gets delivered to that person a lot quicker than through a hierarchical channel. And I've heard really, really good stories for how effective this kind of network type of communication can be. This, for example, in the UK, the second biggest airport there, Gatwick Airport, they use Yammer. And quite often, there's somebody posts an idea on the Yammer network, and then somebody from a completely different team takes action on that idea. And the Yammer champion in that organization, I remember what her job title is, but I call everybody who kind of, you know, run champions, enterprise social networks, or Yammer, specifically Yammer champions. She always likes to ask these people, you know, how did you guys know each other? And 99% of the cases they don't, and that's why they went on Yammer. Another really good benefit of an enterprise social network is that it kind of creates this collective intelligence, partly because, you know, this quicker access to experts, but partly because when you have these discussions on the network, it becomes searchable content. Unlike, you know, information that gets locked up in inboxes or in these kind of old-fashioned email inboxes, you can actually search the network and find the discussions. You know, if you are planning a project, maybe you want to check if somebody else has done something similar beforehand, before you kind of invest in it. And also, there's something very natural about this type of communication, that, you know, it's discussions. You're not filling in a form. It's not a system that you kind of, you know, that becomes a chore when you go like, oh man, now I have to fill in this form to kind of, you know, feeding information into the system. It kind of comes naturally, and people like doing it. And so, and the side, the really big side benefit is that they are actually building this knowledge base. So according to McKinsey, the management consultancy, according to their really good, the social economy report, enterprise social networks can reduce by as much as 35% the time employees spend searching for company information. I think I think that's about right, because it does feel that the speed at which you find information, just, it's phenomenal when you use these enterprise social networks. And I have to kind of add, this is the only slide with a lot of text on it. I don't know how many of you went to Melanie's session yesterday, but it was a pretty good session. I know Melanie, I actually interviewed her maybe 6 months ago or so, and there was a brilliant quote in her interview, bring on the most obscure question you can find about acidification tank materials, box erectors, water jet meat trimming machines, poultry nutrition, Excel pivot tables, agile methodology, and our Cargill Yama network knows. I think that was brilliant. But back to the story. So when I launched Yama, and I had a plan, I actually had a really detailed plan. But because I was so enthusiastic about it, I kind of happened to mention to it to a couple of colleagues that I'm planning to launch this network. And they said, oh, that's really interesting, can we get an invite? And I said, not quite sure, because I haven't officially launched it yet, but yeah, all right, I'll send you an invite if you promise not to invite anybody else. And the next day, 56 people had joined the network, and I kind of, my launch plan went out the window. And I thought, well, brilliant, I don't need to do anything, it just kind of takes care of itself. And the growth was so fast that I don't know how familiar you are with this kind of innovation adoption curve, but basically the idea is that you first the pioneers, kind of, you know, the people who are interested in this kind of stuff, adopt the tool. After that, the early majority who follow the pioneers, they kind of look closely at what these guys are doing. And then the late majority who follow the early majority, but only the early majority. They don't want to kind of associate themselves with the pioneers because the pioneers are a bit odd. And then finally, you've got the laggards who will probably never adopt anything unless they really have to. So I really felt that we actually had reached the tipping point where we'd got enough people from the early majority crowd that I was like, you know, I'll just sit back and concentrate on other things. And I thought, well, this is how it should be. It should be organic. Who am I to tell other, you know, people how to use it? You know, they'll find the right way to use it, the right way for them to use it. In about 6 months or so, the network started to die. It kind of, you know, there were fewer and fewer posts, fewer and questions posted on Yama, And I was gutted. I was like, what went wrong? And this is actually a really, really common phenomenon that actually first the network takes off, a lot of people use it, and then after a while it starts to die down. It's kind of this kind of shiny new tool syndrome where, you know, the people, you know, they're just interested because it's new. And I'm not saying that organic growth doesn't work. In some cases, and often when you read, you know, these success stories and case studies, there is an element of there where, you know, people say, oh, we just, you know, it just grew organically. You know, I'm sure it did. And in some cases, if the organization was ready for it and people were kind of, you know, just waiting for this kind of tool to happen, then it might work. But in most cases, it won't. And I wondered, you know, I started wondering what went wrong. And I found out that I had made the cardinal mistake of forgetting the purpose. The purpose, I thought it's enough that we have a problem, we need to communicate more. That's not enough. You have to be more specific than that. So really successful Yama rollouts or enterprise software rollouts, usually they have an element of where the company or the organization use Yama for something specific. So if, and maybe a really extreme case, well, not extreme, but there was this insurance company that started using Yama to help the people who were taking insurance claim calls. The people who were answering phone calls from people making insurance claim calls. And they wanted to kind of bring down the time that these people were spending on, you know, handling these calls. And they set up a Yama network so that these insurance people could then kind of, you know, solve these customer problems quicker. And that they could measure. It was a specific use case. Another really popular, and this is what almost all organizations use Yama for, at, you know, to some extent, is as a question and answer forum. When you don't know who knows, that's when you go on Yama. But it has to be spelled out. You know, it just can't be vague. And the other issue that we had, and that is also really, really common, is competing channels. And in our case, it was email versus Yammer. In some other organization, it might be something else. There might be three different channels. In our case, it was luckily just two. But the issue was that people were using Yammer and email for same types of messages, and that doesn't work. That doesn't work because people don't have the energy to run on two tracks at the same time. So, for example, one of my colleagues was a really kind of enthusiastic Yammer user. She then started working in a new project team, and this project team had a manager who, you know, wanted to use email for everything. This meant that for a while she was, you know, happy to kind of post things, you know, on Yammer and via email because she had to, because, you know, some people were insisting on using email, some people were using Yammer. But then she just said, you know what, I can't do both. I'm tired. I just don't have the time. And she had to default back to email. So this is why you kind of have to make decisions. Where does what kind of information go? And you have to, before you launch Yammer, or if you've, you know, still kind of, you know, at the early stages, map the territory. What channels are people using for what? Because if there's overlap, then you need to address that. You need to kind of, you know, you might need a decision somewhere that or kind of agree within a team that this is used for this and this is used for that. So kind of people work, you know, people want structure, and you have to provide that structure. So how to solve this? Well, clear guidelines. This is an absolute must, I think. You know, you have to be able to communicate this. And the simpler, the better. And I went yesterday to a session where, you know, there was a really elaborate picture of what channels were used for what. I think it was, I forgot the name of the session, but it was kind of, you know, not as simple as this. And I think in most of your cases, it won't look as this. It won't be this simple, but it should be as simple as possible. So in our case, I drew from Yammer's kind of strengths. So it was whenever, you know, something was, you know, resembled a discussion, it should definitely go on Yammer. If it was a question, it should go on Yammer. If it's for your information, if it's like CCing somebody in, it should go on Yammer. If it's urgent, if it's private, if it's a task for some specific person, or if it includes external people, it should be email. External people were actually, you know, one of the big stumbling blocks for us, because a lot of our staff members just communicated a lot with external people, and they were using email, and it was really difficult for them to kind of then use Yammer and start then use email with these other people. So they defaulted to email, which makes sense in their case. And also shifted the focus from the whole organization to teams. And I know, again, that, you know, not Yammer people don't like the word pilot team, but I use it because when you're selling an idea to senior management, for example, you know, they're kind of a bit cautious, they're a bit, you know, I'm not quite sure about this. If you use the word pilot or an experiment, they're more likely to kind of, you know, go, oh yeah, well, I guess we can do a pilot, I guess we can do an experiment. And not call it like, you know, phase one of your grand plan, even though in reality, of course, it is phase one of your grand plan. It's also, it was a lot easier, for example, for me to then go to those teams with these guidelines in hand and ask them, would this make sense to you, or would you like to kind of modify these to kind of suit your way of what would make sense to you? So that was like definitely worth, you know, doing. That's just, rather than trying to kind of get everybody on board, just kind of find the teams that are ready and open for this kind of way of communicating and collaborating, and start with them. Start small, as the kind of theme has been here in this conference as well, you know. And Another really popular tactic is projects, project teams as Trojan horses. Or as a friend of mine pointed out, why Trojan horses? Aren't these kind of, you know, you're smuggling in this new tool. Aren't they more like Trojan mice? So, but I didn't have time to draw Trojan mice, so you get the Trojan horse. And preferably at least one project where you could calculate the ROI somehow, because even though it's really tricky to kind of, you know, this ROI thing, but because I'll go into that a bit later, but it would be for senior management, you know, from the purpose of selling the idea to senior management, it would be good to have at least one project that could, where you could kind of measure some aspects of it, of the ROI. And like the kind of the insurance company where they could measure time and the efficiency gains. And almost ever, as I told, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Yammer as a Q&A forum is always a good place to start, in my opinion, if you're in doubt, because like me, like, you know, a new employee in this organization that didn't communicate, having a place where you can ask questions is really, really useful. And there's always, and in an organization where there are a lot of silos, this kind of being able to kind of ask these questions is really, really useful. The only problem, obviously, is that if the company culture kind of discourages people to reveal their ignorance, which is then they might not want to do this. But that's, you know, another thing that I can't really go into here. But company culture, yes, it can be difficult in very kind of competitive companies, internally competitive companies, where information is power. But but you can make some small changes. Find the sweet spot, and this is you know, kind of having two hats when you think about this project. You know, on the other hand, think about the employee. How will he or she benefit? And then think about the company. How will the company benefit? If there's overlap, it's a Yammer project. It's definitely kind of, you know, a go. So measuring the value, as I said, you know, measuring ROI is tricky because, for example, I heard the story of a mining company where an engineer in one of the mines came up with the solution to like modify the equipment so it worked better. And he would then post this picture or the kind of, you know, the instructions on Yammer, and other people in other parts of the mining company would then do the same. And then it would get adopted as the kind of, you know, this is the default way of doing things. But because it emerged so quickly, because it just came out of the blue, how do you know what nobody had in place, like, you know, measurement tools, you know, how do you measure that? You know, it's clear in your head. In a way, everybody understands that this was a good thing, but it's just difficult to measure. But saving time could be one thing that you can measure, and like the insurance company people who tried to kind of reduce the time that went into processing insurance claim calls. Another really popular tactic is use the YammerWin hashtag on Yammer whenever you see a conversation that benefited people somehow. If you kind of add these tags or ask people to use these tags or topics on Yammer, then over time you build this database of really good stories. And anecdotal evidence is, you know, good evidence as well. You know, and stories are extremely useful, even with senior management team. People always think that they will have to go to senior management with numbers only, but seriously, you know, stories work as well. So find an executive ally. This is just because, first of all, you might not get everybody in the senior management team on board, but you might get one who can then kind of, you know, act as your executive ally and kind of, you know, as part of your movement to kind of make Yammer or your enterprise social network of choice into this kind of, you know, proper collaboration communication tool. In my case, at first I couldn't get anyone on board from our senior management team, especially not our CEO, who was kind of, you know, not really interested in this at all. But I did find at some point that one of the senior, one of the directors was quite interested in this, and she used Yammer first with, we were kind of renovating the building and building a new floor, to it, which meant a lot of coordination inside the building. So she used Yammer to kind of coordinate this kind of, you know, now you need to do this and this and that, and or her team did. And I was like, yeah, that worked really well, and she got really good feedback from that. And then we actually took the leap and crowdsourced, not crowdsourced, but worked collaboratively on our new strategy on Yammer, which was a pretty big leap. But the CEO wasn't still not very interested in this. But they are, you know, you find one senior executive and work with this person. Work with this person very, very closely. You almost become like his or her personal Yammer, I wouldn't say assistant, but you know, somebody who, you know, whenever they have a question about Yammer, whenever they you know, think that they might need some help, you're there. You know, you answer their call right away, and you also suggest proactively when this person could use Yammer. And this is actually I've actually heard a lot of good examples from organizations where one executive kind of gets Yammer and starts using it and potentially becomes quite, you know, maybe even popular on Yammer, on their local Yammer network, that will also kind of affect the other executives who kind of go like, he's really popular there, or she's really popular, I need to do something like that as well. So it creates this kind of, you know, internal, well, friendly peer pressure between executives. You know, executives are humans too. You know, they want recognition, they want an audience. So that's definitely something you should look into. And when talking to executives, there are a couple of really good reports I would recommend that you have a look at. I think if you read one report, make it the McKinsey Global Institute, The Social Economy. Lots of good stats there, lots of good, you know, information on the trends that are happening at the moment. And then middle management. Middle management has become whenever Yammer champions, you know, get together, there's, you know, this kind of discussion about middle managers almost always happens. And they are a challenge, but they are definitely an opportunity as well. The thing with middle management is that they can actually make things happen. So your staff might have brilliant ideas, but the infrastructure to take those ideas forward doesn't exist. But middle managers are there, they can actually take those ideas forward. That's why I think it's really important to kind of create, have those middle management allies as well, because otherwise you will hit what John Stepper from Deutsche Bank calls the grass ceiling. So these grassroots efforts kind of, you know, go, you know, reach only so far. But if you have middle management, you know, a couple of middle managers there who can, you know, who get it, you're in a much better position to take things forward. And like senior managers, they too want visibility, personal visibility, and they kind of, you know, maybe they are even more driven by kind of, you know, career, slightly more career driven. So, you know, visibility is a good thing for these people. And also maybe they are kind of more interested in the process, you know, the efficiency gain aspect of enterprise social. But that said, you know, they always follow senior managers. So if you have that one senior manager ally, you can then kind of approach middle management after that, and you have a much better case. But still, you know, a lot of people feel like this. It's, you know, trying to change organizational culture. And they feel like this after they've, you know, they don't get immediately, like, positive response from senior managers. But, you know, I would say stick with it. Because even though your senior management team or your middle management would not, you know, immediately get the value of Yammer, you can still do quite a lot, and you can return to them a bit later on when you have a stronger business case. So don't despair. That's like, you know, one of the because people give up at you know, after they don't, you know, see this kind of wonderful success happening, or they see, you know, the viral growth, and then they see the kind of, you know, the slow, well, not death of the network, but kind of things slowing down. It doesn't mean that, you know, you can't, it's lost. It's definitely not lost. You just have to kind of work on it. And this is actually, I've read this really brilliant book called Switch, How to Change Things When Change is Hard. And there's a really good quote. Big problems are rarely solved with big solutions. Instead, they are most often solved by a sequence of small solutions. And this is why you can actually do quite a lot without senior managers necessarily being, you know, on board, fully on board. And the answer, the real asset that you have are the champions that every organization has. You know, they are just might be hiding, they might not be in plain sight, but almost every organization has people who are drawn to this kind of who really get enterprise social and want to make it a success. They are like, you know, I have a background in kind of, you know, part of my background is in online community management. So online community management, there wouldn't be any online communities without so-called community managers and people who feel that it's their responsibility to look after the online community. And they just come from somewhere. I don't know where, but they exist. You just have to find them. And if you have a Yammer network already up and running, one way to find them is to kind of look at who's being quite active on Yammer. So it's kind of, you know, no-brainer. Just kind of, you know, go and have a look who's being active on the network, who keeps sharing stuff. If you don't have a Yammer network, then another possibility would be to, for example, if you have a newsletter, or, you know, talk to internal communication and see if you can put an announcement that, you know, oh, I'm looking for people who would like to kind of make Yammer a success, or, you know, become these kind of internal champions. Because chances are that you will get a couple of people who are interested in this type of role. But the thing is, what you need to do is kind of work with these people strategically. So you have this enthusiasm from these people, but you have to then channel it in the right direction. You have to take the role of the missing senior manager who would kind of provide the, you know, the business goals, if you like. You have to kind of think about where, kind of then drive, kind of help these people to drive the network internally. And I think if you went to Melanie's session, she had a really wonderful term for these people. She called them the border collies. They're kind of the herding the sheep. And there are lots of kind of lovely names for these people. You know, and when it comes to Yammer champions, I've heard, what, Yampians, Yammerheads, whatnot. It's, there's clearly something there that kind of appeals to these people's identity, that they want to be these kind of people. And I actually, to kind of emphasize the importance of these champions, I'm going to show you a really short video. This, apologies if the quality is horrible, but it's definitely worth watching.
If you've learned a lot about leadership and making a movement, then let's watch a movement happen start to finish in under 3 minutes and dissect some lessons. First, of course, a leader needs the guts to stand alone and look ridiculous. But what he's doing is so simple, it's almost instructional. This is key. You must be easy to follow. Now here comes the first follower with a crucial role. He publicly shows everyone else how to follow. Notice how the leader embraces him as an equal. So it's not about the leader anymore. It's about them, plural. Notice how he's calling to his friends to join in. See, it takes guts to be a first follower. You stand out and you brave ridicule yourself. Being a first follower is an underappreciated form of leadership. The first follower transforms a lone nut into a leader. If the leader is the flint, the first follower is the spark that really makes the fire. Now here's the second follower. This is a turning point. It's proof the first has done well. Now it's not a lone nut and it's not two nuts. Three is a crowd and a crowd is news. A movement must be public. Make sure outsiders see more than just the leader. Everyone needs to see the followers, because new followers emulate followers, not the leader. Now here come two more people, then three more immediately. Now we've got momentum. This is the tipping point, and now we have a movement. As more people jump in, it's no longer risky. If they were on the fence before, there's no reason not to join in now. They won't stand out, they won't be ridiculed, and they will be part of the in crowd if they hurry. And over the next minute, you'll see the rest who prefer to stay part of the crowd, because eventually they'd be ridiculed for not joining. And ladies and gentlemen, that is how a movement is made. So let's recap what we've learned. If you are a version of the shirtless dancing guy, all alone, remember the importance of nurturing your first few followers as equals, making everything clearly about the movement, not you. Be public, be easy to follow. But the biggest lesson here, did you catch it? Leadership is over-glorified. Yes, it started with the shirtless guy, and he'll get all the credit, but you saw what really happened. It was the first follower that transformed a lone nut into a leader. There's no movement without the first follower. See, we're told that we all need to be leaders, but that would be really ineffective. The best way to make a movement, if you really care, is to courageously follow and show others how to follow. When you find a lone nut doing something great, have the guts to be the first person to stand up and join in.
Yes, the first follower turns a lone nut into a leader. That's how important these champions are. And that's why I didn't despair, and you shouldn't despair, if senior managers are a bit reluctant at first. I'd really like to kind of talk about these champions a little bit more, because these are fascinating people. They are very pragmatic. They just want to make things work. They are not clearly not driven by, I will get a promotion if I do this, or I will get a race if I do this. But they just kind of, they just feel that they want to make things work. They also seem to have this kind of curator mindset, or maybe they're kind of closet librarians, I don't know, but they kind of want to oh, this goes here, and this goes there, and they have a network mindset. They are connectors. They kind of, feel that they want to connect people to know, oh, you should talk to this, and that, you might have something in common. This person might be able to help you. They're also incredibly patient. You have to be in this role, and approachable. So your job, in a way, when you recruited these champions, or you have, and these champions, by the way, do kind of, pop up organically. You kind of then bring them to your fold. You kind of, when you see that somebody's kind of being really active, you might invite them proactively to kind of become join your crowd. So you become almost like this meta community manager. So you look after these people. You make sure that they share best practice, and you create a place for them to interact. It might be a Yammer group. It might be, and I think it should be a Yammer group. And it could also be a face-to-face meetings as well, depending on what kind of, if you're a globally dispersed organization, then it might be a bit challenging, but face-to-face is always good. And you kind of, agree on, and these guys can also kind of come up with the really good ideas for a pilot project. I heard that there's this project being planned on this thing, and I think this might be our way in. So you kind of, plot together how to kind of, smuggle Yammer into kind of different projects and processes. Then the tactics, the kind of interesting bit where the tactics me and my champions used to kind of get people to use Yammer. The mission is behavior change, and behavior change is always difficult. People are slaves to their habits, and those habits are what you need to change. And these are kind of, I'll show you a couple of tips and tricks that you can use in your work. First of all, what you need to do is get them in through the door. That's, you can't, you know, do anything before you actually have people, you know, come and visit the network. And what we did, we used killer content, the kind of content you have access to, that everybody wants, and you can control. And we decided that, you know, this kind of content, we'll put it only on Yammer. And so that I had a lot of my Yammer champions were team administrators. These people, you know, who probably wanted to become Yammer champions because these people really felt the pain of email, because they had a lot of information to give to their team members and they got a lot of questions from them. But team admins also had information that everybody in the team needed. So we agreed that we would kind of put some of this content only on Yammer. And of course, people would protest at first. You know, they were like, you know, why can't you email it? And, you know, but you have to stay strong. You know, I'm more than happy for you to have this content. I'm happy to help, but it's only available on Yammer. So you get them in through the door. But that's not enough. You get them in through the door, but the next thing you have to provide for people is their transformative enterprise social experience. And the thing is, you might have to engineer this experience at first. It's the kind of experience that you, when, for example, you have a question and somebody answers it in like 10 minutes and you go like, wow, you know, somebody knew the answer, or you get really good comments and you find that those comments really helpful. So if your network is really young, it might be that you don't have that kind of in a kind of active older network. There's this kind of, you know, you don't have to worry about it. You almost always get somebody to answer people's questions and comment. But in a young network, you might need to engineer it a bit. So for example, if somebody you know is kind of not very into Yammer, goes on Yammer finally and posts a question or comments, you make sure that there's an answer to that question or a comment or even a like within 24 hours. Because, and this is kind of from the online community world, I've kind of learned that if people don't get an immediate response and an immediate within 24 hours, meaning in this case, they won't come back. They have to have that experience as soon as possible. So you, and the more people, and if, when it comes to senior managers or key people, or you know the people you really want to use Yammer, you keep an eye on, you know, when they are there and when they post something, so you and your champions can go on high alert when the CEO has finally posted something or the director's finally posted something, so you can react to it as quickly as you can. You use email to kind of, you know, to alert people, or phone people, whatever, you know, I don't care, but you have to kind of engineer this experience for them if it doesn't happen organically. And there's a really good story. I talked to this guy from a big North American brewing company who was doing a session with their chairman of the board, maybe a guy in his 60s, I don't know, and he was showing how Yammer works, and this chairman then posted something on Yammer, and within minutes somebody had liked his post. And the chairman was actually, he was really kind of in a taken, like, wow, somebody liked my post. Great. And it doesn't take that much to actually kind of, you know, get that, you know, transformative experience. And then what they did, they had a look who had liked his post. And it turns out it was an employee from England. So and then he checked that actually he posted this like after office hours. And this, you know, was even more impressive to the chairman of the board. And after that, he became a Yammer convert, and you know, he could act as a kind of senior ally. So it doesn't take much necessarily to kind of engineer these experiences. And this wasn't engineered, by the way, this was kind of happened organically. Then you have to strengthen this new behavior. That you kind of got them on Yammer, they've had that transformative experience, but you have to kind of make them kind of do it again and again and again. And for that, I don't know, I came up with a kind of, you know, term nudging people. I guess there might be a real term for it, but I call it nudging. So basically, me and my champions, what we did, for example, when we saw a question, either we heard it, overheard it, we saw somebody email a question, We would kind of, you know, approach that person via email, you know, ironically, or phone them or talk to them and say, you know what, I think this would have worked really well on Yammer. And I'm pretty sure somebody from Team X might have been able to help you, but couldn't because you didn't post it on Yammer. But next time, remember, do this. And whenever we saw something like this happen, people suddenly kind of, you know, the email discussion spiraling into this kind of horrible thread, we always kind of, you know, would go to the person and say, you know what? This could have worked on Yammer really, really well. Now people could, you know, it's easier to follow the discussion. Also, when new people come in, you want somebody to kind of have a look at the discussion. It's really easy for them to just go on Yammer and have a look. You know, you're not going to forward like 52 message email thread to anyone. And another thing that we kind of kept our eyes open for was CCing people. So whenever we saw that somebody had CC'd more than, I don't know, two people, more than three people, we'd go like, you know what, if it's of interest to so many people, why didn't you post it? I mean, it could have worked on Yammer as well, because CCing is in a way a sign that there's something that, you know, might be of interest, but is not, you know, not really that urgent or that important, which to, you know, following our Yammer guidelines could have, you know, should go on Yammer. I'll just quickly give you an example of you know, how you can kind of break down a behavior that's formerly been, for example, email-based into something that then only happens on Yammer. As the part-time internal communications, I was responsible for the newsletter, the internal newsletter. From the survey, I knew that people were actually really happy with the newsletter. It was their only window to what the rest of the organization were doing. So when we launched Yammer, I was like, you know what? This, you know, following my killer content strategy, I would go like, you know what? The newsletter will be, from now on, only available on Yammer. But people weren't very happy with that. There was an outrage. You just can't do that. You know, not everybody uses Yammer. You know, just don't do it. You know, they were really, really upset. So I thought, you know, you have to listen to your audience. So I didn't put it on Yammer just yet. What I did instead, because I compiled the newsletter from other people's stories. People would send me stories via email. And now ask, could you put this in the newsletter? And then I would like, you know, maybe yes, I will edit it a bit. And what I asked these people to do is to post these, you know, stories on Yammer first, and I will then put them in the newsletter. And I asked them to kind of use this hashtag which was TWTW, the week that was, which was the name of the newsletter. So they kind of were, you know, they were like, first like, oh man, I don't want to post it on Yammer, but they did it anyway because they wanted me to put it in the newsletter. But what happened was, and when I posted these stories on Yammer, people started to comment and ask questions, and after that, it wasn't really difficult to kind of, you know, get these people to post these stories on Yammer. So we worked like this for about maybe 6 months. What I did then was that I kind of shortened the story that was in the newsletter quite radically. So it was really kind of just a really short summary of the story. If you wanted to read the whole story, you would have to go on Yammer. The next step was, after that, maybe after a year or so, was that I removed the whole story and I just left the headline. The headline was the link to a story on Yammer. And then, finally, after about 2 years, I said, you know what, the newsletter will now cease to exist and it will become Yammer only. And the only comment I got was, what took you so long? And so it's, you know, even though you face, you know, initial resistance and there's an outrage, you kind of can engineer a process that, you know, over time will make it a Yammer thing. The thing is that it takes time. It just takes, you know, in my case, it took 2 years. Maybe I could have done it in a year and a half, but still. Another thing, an important job for what your Yammer champions can do is curation. And this is something that comes into play when the network is a bit older, when there's a lot of content and you kind of feel that there's People feel a bit overwhelmed, starting to kind of, you know, there's a lot of content in the all company feed that everybody gets. I don't know, if you use Yammer, you know what I'm talking about. All the rest of you, it's the kind of basic news feed that everybody gets. You can't escape it, it's there. And then you've got groups. In our cases, those were based mainly on functional teams. So you had these groups that were becoming, and I realized that we actually had recreated the silos of the organization with these groups. So I started to kind of talk to Yammer champions, you know what, guys, could you keep an eye on stories or discussions that might be relevant to other people in the organizations and share them in the all company feed when you think it's you know, worth doing so. And another thing that these champions can do is tag content or use these topics. Because, I mean, initially I was kind of idealistic. I said, you know what, everybody who uses Yammer has to tag content. You have to use topics so that, you know, it's easy to find content later on. But when it's everybody's responsibility, it's no one's responsibility. And I kind of wanted to make sure that at least the key topics were tagged. So I relied on my champions to kind of do that tagging, even though I also, you know, recommend, you know, try to get everybody else to do it. So at the moment, Yammer, I mean, I'm sure Yammer is now, and Microsoft are kind of trying to build really smart algorithms that will kind of predict what you want to see, what's relevant to you. But at the time when we were using Yammer, it was kind of that this was becoming a bit of an issue where there was kind of, you know, so much content in the all company newsfeed that, you know, we had to kind of start to add these curation techniques into it. But I'm pretty sure the need for curation will never go away. The bigger the network, the more likely you will need this kind of techniques. And I highly recommend that if this, you know, you don't know what I'm talking about, curation and online community management, there are really good resources online, really good blogs and books on online community management. I'll put them in the talk notes. I'll have the URL here after the talk, where you can kind of find this kind of information. Another technique that I used, and I think a lot of people use, but I think it really something to consider, is new employees as change agents, because when somebody joins a company, they have a lot of questions. And what you can kind of use this need for kind of, you know, learn, their need to learn about the organization, the need to connect with other people in the organization, to kind of, you know, to turn them into secret Yammer agents. Because when, for example, before they join your company, a lot of people, I think the official term is pre-boarding, where you can, some companies, for example, they set up an external Yammer network for new joiners where they can kind of talk to each other. They can, you know, the employees, the current employees come and answer their questions, and you kind of have this pre, you know, before they join the organization that they are, you know, can hit the ground running. So, and other technique that people use, that they set up a group inside the Yammer network to, where new employees can interact, where they can kind of bond, because you have a lot of questions, and you can ask all the stupid questions that you wouldn't dare to ask because everybody else in the company seems to know the answers to them. So you are kind of creating this transformative enterprise social experience for these new employees, because they will immediately get the benefit when they use the network this way. Another really, and a lot of my, because we got a lot of new employees coming in, you know, every month, and I have to do inductions. So I would talk to these people, and I knew that it wasn't so much of a training session as a preparation session for because I knew that some of them would land in teams that were a bit like Yammer, reluctant to use Yammer. So I would tell them that, you know, even though I know for a fact that you will go to a team that is not using Yammer that much, don't let that, you know, stop you from you using it. So please, you know, ask questions, you know, connect with other people in the organization. I, in a way, I gave them a permission to use Yammer, kind of modeling the behavior and telling that it's okay, even though because I knew that they would go to a team where they would then observe other people and go like, you know what, nobody's using it, I'm not going to use it. But if you kind of show, and I showed screenshots of people using Yammer and all the kind of useful stuff, for example, that my team was doing, I used a lot of screenshots from my team, which were really eye-opening for these people, because they could then go like, they would have this image in their head when they would go to their teams, and they kind of, you know, I can't see this happening here, but I know it's really useful, so I will do it. And these new employees were really enthusiastic Yammer users, and so I highly recommend this tactic, and maybe teaming up with HR to get this thing going. And it's always good to remember that you are actually building something bigger here. So even though you have this kind of pilot project, pilot teams, your champions there, you are, you know, just at the beginning of something a lot bigger. You are trying to kind of make the organization more collaborative and kind of transform communication practices that are now a bit hierarchical into something that is more like a network. That's, you know, work like a network, as has been the theme here at the conference. So it's good to kind of keep that in mind, that you are indeed building something bigger. Another thing that I kind of, you know, this is a really common problem, is that this is a real job, kind of making this network grow, community management. It's not a hobby. It's even though it starts off often as a kind of side thing, as a volunteer, you volunteer to kind of do something like on the side. But it actually takes a lot of resources, and it really kind of, you know, this is why when you kind of need that evidence of successful projects, that kind of business case, when you approach senior management at some point and ask for more resources, that you have it, because otherwise you will wear yourself out if you're doing it on the side of something else. So tactics recap. So pilot teams and champions, crucial. Killer content as the kind of driver, you know, to get people to inside the network. Then clear guidelines, and then nudging and curation as these kind of community management techniques. Senior managers, round two. If you've now had like, you know, a couple of, you know, you maybe five pilot projects, three pilot projects, and some of them, you know, that you've been quite successful, you have good stories using the Yammer Win hashtag, or you have even ROI calculated in some cases, or the kind of efficiency gains, then you go to senior management team and you might have kind of get them on board finally. It's really difficult to get them, might be really difficult to get them on board at first, but after this round, these experiments phase one, Yammer implementation, it's much easier. So what happened in my organization? Well, we'd been using Yammer for about a year or year and a half. I did a new survey, which was, I was pretty pleased with the results. 73% said internal communication had improved or significantly improved. Number of people who used Yammer every day had doubled. So after the kind of, you know, the disappointment, we kind of got back on track. Everybody was using Yammer one way or another. A lot of people used it via email. And we had some teams that were using Yammer really well. So the web team, for example, used it for everything. Their team leader, when I went to senior management team meetings, would kind of, you know, ask the team, what should she say? What are the issues that they want senior management to know? And, you know, for agenda items, for meeting notes, and all discussions via email were banned within that team. But then there were also teams that, you know, really kind of, you know, couldn't get rid of email, partly because there were managers who were against it, or they were using, like I told you, the example of the team who interacted with external people quite a bit, and it was really difficult to integrate Yammer into that equation, so it didn't work for them. And we also, new ways, we developed, you know, people just came up with new ways of using the network. So there were, for example, we used high five topic to kind of, thank people in the organization who had done a really good job. We crowdsourced our strategy, crowdsourced, but collaborating on it and what should be included, what should not be included in the strategy. So it was a moderate success. But why does all this matter? And I'm really kind of think it's important to kind of think about how your grassroots or your kind of, you know, bottom up approach will, why it matters for the organization. And a lot of you probably went to Adam Pisoni's talk, and you've been to other talks where, you know, you talk about this shift, this kind of, you know, change in how the world operates and how businesses operate. And this world is becoming just so fast and so complex for these old hierarchical processes that you'd be kind of, that they just can't change fast enough. And we've seen kind of quite high profile casualties, you know, big companies falling because they just couldn't deal with this new environment. So a network, if you kind of have network as part of your communication processes and communication, the way you communicate, you become a bit more flexible. You can, you know, I think it's an enterprise social network is just part of one of the responsive organization kind of way of operating, but it's a crucial part of it. And you can just, because you can, the people who are in the front lines can get information to the kind of center a lot quicker through a network than through hierarchical processes, so the organization becomes quicker to respond. Another really good reason to kind of, you know, for using an infrastructure network is innovation, in my opinion, because, and innovation is probably a word you've heard, you know, a lot of times, you know, we have to become more innovative. But innovation never happens in, well, I guess sometimes it does happen in an innovation team, but usually what innovation happens in at intersections where people from different worlds talk to each other, when different worlds collide. And this is, again, where community management tactics can come into play. They can facilitate these collisions or meet, you know, interactions. And then, but then even if all these kind of big changes are going on, we have at the same time this kind of disengagement epidemic, and this costs, disengaged employees cost a lot of money to companies. According to Gallup, disengaged workforce costs businesses an estimated $550 billion annually in the US. But what these kind of enterprise social networks tend to do is they kind of tap into these, what actually drives people. And you, I don't know how many of you have read Daniel Pink's book Drive, which kind of summarizes the kind of latest research on what actually motivates and engages people. It's autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And autonomy means that you have control over your life and work, so you're not micromanaged. You can make some decisions on your own as well. You can feel that you are in control, at least of some bit of the process. And mastery, meaning that you get better at something that matters. And you really get better at your job if you kind of get to share your information and get to learn from others. And purpose, finally. It's the feeling that you are part of something bigger, that you are kicking the ball in the same goal, if I use a soccer term here. And and people want to help people, and it gives them purpose as well. So these enterprise social networks are doing a lot more than just, you know, meets the eye. So if you want to drive enterprise social, I think the number one thing, if you are in the situation that you can't decide, now everybody used the network, is to find allies, recruit these champions. When you get home, when you get back in the office, and if you're kind of thinking about rolling out Yammer, or you already have your network, kind of, you know, make it, you know, find these people, create a group, and start kind of having regular meetings and brainstorming with these people. Where do you find the best projects? And sharing best practice. And start pilot projects, and remember the business value aspect of it. So no staff Christmas party planning committee projects. I mean, they are nice to have, and they should be there as well, but they are not what you should focus on. And use community management techniques. There's a lot of information out there. how to use those techniques. And finally, take the lead. This is, you know, what people feel sometimes, that, oh, it's not in my job title to kind of lead on this. I'm not a manager, or I'm not this or that. But if you, the situation with enterprise social networks at the moment is that it doesn't seem to belong to any particular department in an organization. If you find that this is the case in your organization and nobody is willing to lead strategically, you know, you do it, but lead behind the scenes if you have to, kind of, you know, you don't have to kind of be, I'm the leader, I'm leading this project. So kind of, you know, just by, for example, creating this group of Yammer champions, you are already taking kind of these steps to kind of lead this effort. And it's I'm not saying that you're going to change the organization, but you definitely will get the ball rolling. And it's worth doing. It really is. So finally, after the session, since we're kind of, you know, 3 minutes left, go on Yammer. And if you have concerns regarding Yammer and kind of the rollout process, you know, post your question there. Post, and I'll see if I can find a solution or some sort of, you know, inspiration for you to draw from. And the notes and links to resources can be found here. I will update that page shortly after the session. And evaluation, if you would like to kind of give some feedback on the session, then that would be great. So, thank you and good luck.